wonderful music was a cut from Steve Halpern's Chakra Suite. I was playing it right before the show just to see if the sounds could soothe away a very hectic day. And it did, and so I thought I'd pass it on to you, our listeners. This is BBS Radio. I'm your host for the next hour on Sound Health. Thank you for joining us. On this show, we try to bring you information and ideas to enhance the idea of self-health. Today we're going to be talking about soy products and how ingesting soy may be contributing to a form of sexual genocide. That sounds fascinating. Our guest will be Kayla Daniels in just a few moments right after these announcements. Well, some of you have been following along our BioDiet program, and we have posted some vocal impressions for you. One is James Gandolfini from The Sopranos, and we did a BioDiet evaluation of him about his weight and found out something incredibly interesting and possibly life-threatening. So we've posted that for you on BBS Radio. Under Vocal Impressions, you go to BBS Radio, and on the left side, down the side, I think it's the second set down, it says Vocal Impressions. You'll find it there, and we did Kirstie Alley and Kung Fu Panda. That's Jack Black. So go to BBS Radio if you want to read those. And if you have, I'm trying to read a note somebody just sent me. And if you have suggestions or information that you want about your favorite star, who's telling the truth, who's not, who's fibbing, who's fat, and why, and who's getting along and who isn't, and you really want to know the truth, just drop us a line. We'll try to find out. And you can write to us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. And now I have something very, very serious to talk to you about. Our returning soldiers and their lack of available health care. In our own small community here, we have many soldiers, men and women, returning with PTSD, that's post-traumatic stress disorder, and TBI, traumatic brain injuries, from these very close proximity acoustic blasts. The stories have been running in our local papers about their lack of care and the lack of funding for being able to help and take care of those who return here as broken heroes. First, I want to say that I don't necessarily agree with the war, nor do I condone the economic crisis that's causing our country, but I do care about the soldiers and what happens to them. And so here we have created two new computer programs, PTSD and TBI, and we're finishing them up this week. The preliminary pilot report was very encouraging. We took civilians with traumatic brain injury and were able to help them. We've provided that proof of concept with our research here at the Center for Sound Health and the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. And our job now is to get that information to the public and to people who can help. But we can't do the job by ourselves. We're only a really small organization, and there are thousands of cases to take care of. So we're asking anyone who has interest in helping us, please come forward. And if you have an interest in bringing this to your community in the form of lectures or workshops or a radio show, let us know. You can again write to radio@vocalprofiling.com. Anything like donations or grants or sponsorships are definitely welcome. And if you live in Ohio, there's a direct income tax rebate because we've been approved by the state of Ohio as an innovative biotech company located in a distressed area in southern Ohio. Actually, we're the largest alternative health facility, in southern Ohio, if not this entire region. And we have been getting some small scholarships. They've been providing us matching funds for people who want to take the course to become bioacoustic providers. So if you want to get involved with that, you could also call us at 698-9119, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 Eastern. To date, we've been autonomous, not taking money from drug companies or people who want to manipulate us, and we'd like to stay that way. I'd like to teach everyone to do this technique. I'd like to do it for free, but I realistically, I just can't. I need to pay employees and the telephone bill and taxes. So anybody who's listening and they're interested in helping, or anyone who has ideas on how we can help the maimed and emotionally destroyed men and women coming back, that's just costing so many lives in so many ways. So please get in touch with us. It's time to make a difference. And I'll even give you my personal email. It's Sherry Edwards, S-H-A-R-R-Y, Edwards at gmail.com. In case you're just joining us, this is VBS Radio. Our guest is going to be Kayla Daniels, and she's going to be talking about the whole soy story. Dr. Daniels is a whole nutritionist, W-H-O-L-E, whole nutritionist with the National Sciences and Anti-Aging Therapies from the Union Institute and the University in Cincinnati. She's a board-certified clinician in nutrition by the International and American Association of Clinical Nutritionists, board of directors of the Weston A. Price Foundation. She specializes in healthy aging, cognitive enhancement, digestive disorders, women's reproductive health issues, infertility, children's nutrition. Oh, and she is the author of a wonderful book, The Whole Soy Story. Welcome back to the show, Kayla.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on your show, Sherry.
Thank you, and thank you for listening to my soapbox about these incoming soldiers about not getting help. I want to talk about a zillion things because you're into lots of different avenues of soy and its degrading of our health. We got lots of questions already have come in from people. How did you get involved in the soy controversy?
I became involved because I was seeing so many sick vegetarians and health-conscious individuals who had been eating a lot of soy. And like most of us, I'd been reading that soy is a miracle food that cures everything from cancer to ingrown toenails. And I was curious because I thought, if soy is so good for us, why are these people having so many bad health effects from it? And that led me to research the subject, and I spent 4 years and finally wrote my book.
You disappeared on me there for a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you disappeared. We are having a big thunderstorm here, so that might be part of it.
Okay. So this was not from a personal response to soy, but from people you were working with.
No, luckily I never fell for the soy myth. I just never liked the taste of most modern soy products, and I never fell for that.
Well, we have a great audience here. They're excited to hear about new things, and they're open. They want to make a difference in their own lives and their families. What's the latest news on soy?
The latest news came out of North Carolina State University, and researchers there discovered that the reason that soy can damage female infants, leading to premature puberty, is because of damage to the hypothalamus, and that's the region of the brain essential to the regulation of puberty and ovulation. So all of a sudden, we're finding out how and why some of these problems have been occurring.
Does it really become a problem with fertility?
It certainly does. And what we know is that there are various windows of opportunity, as the soy industry would say, or windows of vulnerability, which is the way I would put it, in which plant estrogens or other environmental estrogens, it's not just soy estrogens, but the fetus during pregnancy is vulnerable to excessive estrogen exposure. The baby after birth is extremely vulnerable. Children remain vulnerable because as long as their brains and bodies are still growing, they need true human hormones, and they can be adversely affected when the hormone production is interfered with by plant estrogens. So there are many vulnerable stages in a person's life, particularly to the babies and children. But also, as we grow older, whenever people are under hormonal stress or hormonal changes, such as in menopause, those are the times during life which soy can really harm us.
Well, does soy, something in it, take up the receptor sites and replace the what's supposed to be the real hormones with something not too good for us?
There's two ways that the problem happens. The soy estrogens can block the hormonal receptor sites, and that can block the body's ability to use estrogen or, for that matter, other hormones. And in little boys, the particular danger is that they're blocking the proper use of testosterone. The second way is that the soy estrogens interfere with estrogen production and other hormone production. So double whammy.
Well, does that decrease someone's sex drive, their libido?
It certainly can. We've got some evidence of that. And in fact, there's besides the scientific evidence, we do have plenty of anecdotal evidence. For example, in the Zen monasteries in Asia, the monks will eat a whole lot of extra tofu because it helps them maintain their vows of celibacy. It seems that when the tofu consumption went up, the naughty behavior went down.
Whew. I've read articles, several of them, that soy also decreases sperm count.
It can, absolutely. There's a number of studies, and the most recent one came out of the Harvard School of Public Health, and the researchers were looking at infertile couples and trying to figure out what the problems were, and they discovered that the men in the study who were eating soy twice a week, so or a half serving a day, basically not very much soy, they discovered that those men had 41 million sperm per milliliter fewer than the omnivorous men. So this is serious.
So eating soy, both men and women, is really playing havoc with a form of genocide.
Well, some people have claimed that the promotion of soy products to African Americans and Native Americans is in fact genocide, and soy is very heavily promoted to those populations in the form of soy infant formula.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Nutritional genocide from birth on. Well, actually from conception. That's kind of crazy. Why isn't this just giant headlines everywhere?
Well, I think that is going to happen. Bit by bit, we are getting the word out. And it's been extremely helpful that over the past couple years, the Israeli Health Ministry, the French Food Agency, the German Institute for Risk Assessment, and other foreign governments have started issuing warnings to their citizens. So this has really helped us let people know that this is actually a mainstream issue and that we're not some crazies on the sidelines, that this, in fact, is a genuine issue.
Now, there's a lot of food. I was looking in the fridge just for some things before the show. Parquet margarine had soy in it, and the salad dressing. And, I mean, there's so many hidden things you wouldn't think if you pick up your margarine that it's going to end up being soy.
This is a nightmare for people who are allergic to soy, and soy is now one of the top 8 allergens. So the fact that soy is present in more than 60% of packaged and processed foods and nearly 100% of fast foods makes it a real challenge for people who are allergic to or sensitive to soy.
100% of fast foods?
Yes, if you go and your fast food burger will have soy protein in it, the bun will have soy flour in it, the shake will have soy in it, the french fries will probably be fried in soy oil, and so it goes.
And is this just because it's cheap or somebody's pushing this on it?
Well, in the case of fast foods, it's because it's cheap. But the fact that it is being so heavily promoted as healthy has increased the amount of it in just about every food out there, because it used to be that if you say, looked at a can of tuna and you saw that it contained tuna plus soy protein isolate, you would think, I don't want this cheap additive. But now people look at it, and as long as they don't taste it, they're thinking, well, this is healthier.
Is there some kind of secret words where they're putting it in there, or does it have to say soy on it?
There has been passed an Allergen Labeling Act, and that came in January 2006. And ever since that act was passed, the manufacturers are required to say soy, S-O-Y. Because before that, they were hiding behind words that a lot of people didn't recognize, things like lecithin, hydrolyzed plant protein, textured vegetable protein, and things like that, which people would not necessarily know are soy.
Do you have a list of those on your website?
Yes, on soyfreesolutions.com.
Soyfree, F-R-E-E, solutions.com.
Right.
Okay, and you also have a book about this.
I do. It's called The Whole Soy Story, The Dark Side of America's Favorite Health Food. And there's a lot of information about the various names for soy and where soy is found in several chapters having to do with the whole allergy issue. But these days, it's not just an allergy issue. There are so many people with problems such as hypothyroidism and reproductive problems, and many of those people are also trying to avoid soy.
Now, in one of your books, there was a subtitle, I think. I remember reading about, here are the things that the soy industry doesn't want you to know.
That's true. They definitely don't want us to know about this.
What all are they keeping from us? That it's ruining fertility. I know in a couple of the kids that we've seen here that were on soy milk, they have very fragile bones. What other kinds of things happen from soy?
There are many, many problems. And in addition to the allergy problem, which is more and more widespread for several reasons, part of that is the increased use of soy formula. Part of it is the increased use of genetically modified soybeans, which came into the food supply about 10 years ago. And also the other reason would be the fact that soy is in so many more products, so many, many more people are now developing allergic responses. But quite aside from the people who have allergies, we have massive evidence that soy has been linked to malnutrition, digestive distress, thyroid dysfunction, cognitive decline, reproductive problems, immune system breakdown. Soy even causes heart disease and cancer.
How?
Well, let's look at the heart disease issue.
Pardon?
Let's look at the heart disease issue.
Okay.
Many people believe that soy is healthy, at least for our hearts. And they've been given that impression because so many soy foods in the marketplace carry a health claim that was approved by the FDA indicating that 25 grams of soy protein per day will help prevent heart disease and will lower cholesterol. And that health claim came in 1999. And the evidence has mounted since then that soy not only does not prevent heart disease and does not lower cholesterol, but that it in fact can increase heart disease risk. And the American Heart Association in January 2006 reversed its position, and the American Heart Association now says soy does not lower cholesterol, does not prevent heart disease. And so, of course, it should not be the subject of a health claim. And in January of this year, Dr. Galen Knight and Dr. Kilmer McCulley, Dr. McCulley is the father of the homocysteine theory of heart disease, and Dr. Mary Enig and I, we put together a petition, 65-page petition to the FDA asking the agency to retract this disease health claim. And we're hopeful that that's going to happen because the evidence is quite overwhelming that been heart disease. And we presented evidence showing how it increases homocysteine levels, and that's a genuine risk factor for heart disease. And there have also been several studies indicating that soy will increase the risk of cardiomyopathy. And that's a very widespread health problem today, with 1 in 500 Americans experiencing that. And it's the leading cause of death in young athletes. You know, when you hear about a basketball player dropping dead on the field or something like that.
How did this claim get there in the first place if it wasn't valid?
Well, remember, this is the same FDA that gave us Vioxx and aspartame.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people will tell me, well, the FDA must have really looked at the evidence on soy to have allowed the health claim. But what they're forgetting is this is the same FDA that's in bed with big business. And the soy industry is a huge business now.
If you have a question for Dr. Daniel, our number here, numbers, I should say, in the U.S., 877-876-5227. And toll-free in Canada and the U.S., 888-815-9756. Direct line is 530-876-3222. But the best way is just to write us at radio at Vocal Profiling, radio at Vocal Profiling. I'm monitoring the email, and we'll get your questions on. Is there different forms of soy, and do the different forms have different influences on the body?
That is certainly part of the issue. Now, small amounts of old-fashioned soy products, such as miso soup, natto, tempeh, small amounts of those are not a problem. They're nutritious, good foods, and they're generally not eaten to excess. The problem happens when people start eating modern, highly processed, industrially processed soybean products, such as soy protein isolate, textured vegetable protein, soy protein concentrate, and also when they excessively eat things like soy energy bars, veggie burgers, when they snack on edamame. Now, a little bit of that is not a problem, but some people are eating whole bags of it like it's popcorn. And one of the worst problems is with soy milk, not because it's the worst product, but because many people drink a lot of it. They'll drink it for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, and that is definitely a problem.
Well, there's options to that, isn't there? Rice milk, almond milk, plain, well, I don't know about what you guys feel about the cow's milk on the store shelves today, but I find it offensive.
Yes, I would never endorse supermarket dairy products. We do need good raw milk products from clean, pastured animals that have been living good lives. That's important both for the animals and for us, for our health. And there are certainly problems with commercial pasteurized and ultra-pasteurized milk, even if it's organic, because most of the organic products in the stores have been ultra-pasteurized. So hard to digest, not supportive of good health. I do have problems with things like rice milk because of the high sugar content and very low nutrition. But at least products like that don't have the plant estrogens, which we do find in the soy milk products. But all of those products have problems with, they have a lot of cheap additives, hard to absorb calcium, for example, vitamin D2, which is an inferior form of vitamin D, which is not helpful to our health. And those products can lead to problems with osteoporosis and poor bone growth. So we have more and more reports of poor bone growth for children.
So we should stay away from veggie burgers, which is probably soy. And
they're
soy hot dogs. How about the protein powder in these protein drinks? You said they're in protein bars. So we should also read the label on protein powders to see if they're going to say soy in it.
Yeah, soy protein shakes are particularly dangerous, and a lot of people are drinking soy shakes. They're using soy milk with that, and that's a very high level of soy consumption right there, and that's a very dangerous product.
What about soy sauce and fermented things like tofu?
Old-fashioned soy sauce, which would be raw and unpasteurized, where it's been fermenting for a year or more, that's actually a very healthy product, I mean, provided you're not, drowning your food in it, of course. But that's a good product. But most of the soy sauces on the market are not high quality, so that's something we need to be concerned with.
I was surprised that soy sauce had wheat in it.
The tamari soy sauce has wheat and soybeans, and if that has been long-term fermented, that can be a good product. But, of course, we have many people who are sensitive to wheat.
Is there an issue with soy by itself or soy mixed with something? Does that make it bitter or worse?
If it's mixed with other bad products, that's going to make things worse. For example, if you had a soy energy bar, it's got soy protein isolate, maybe it's got partially hydrogenated fats and poor quality sugars. There's a lot of potential problems with products like that.
Well, in doing some of the research for the show, I've been reading about Chinese and Japanese diet and about they've been eating soy for generations without an issue, or is that information not available?
They have been eating small amounts of soy for many, many years, but that would be in small quantity, and of course the type of soy foods they're eating is very different from what Americans are eating. For example, they would be having small quantities of miso soup or natto or tofu or... But we're talking condiments in the diet, not staple foods. And that's a huge difference. The soy industry actually sees Asia as a huge untapped market for its products. And companies like Solae have been moving into China, building big plants, and they're marketing soy as they're selling the Asians on their natural heritage.
Are there any nutrients in soy products?
Well, yes, certainly with something like miso and natto and tempeh, those are very nutritious products, and if we eat them a few times a week moderately, that will be good for us. That will support our health.
I know when I eat soy, and almost in any form, I have a hormonal reaction. I get dizzy-headed. I get really grouchy, like PMS symptoms. That's more of an allergy to soy, isn't it?
There's many possible reasons for that. It could be the phytoestrogens. It could be that you've chosen some highly processed products, which include MSG. And MSG is found in products like soy protein isolate and textured vegetable protein. It's produced as part of the manufacturing process. It's not just necessarily added, although some of these products also have added MSG because it improves the flavor. But when you hydrolyze soy, or for that matter, if you hydrolyze anything, if you hydrolyze wheat or corn or whey, you're going to get MSG. So that could cause some of the symptoms you described.
So it's the processing of it that's the issue. Does anybody ever eat soybeans like pinto beans? I've never. I just was asking the question.
Well, if you talk to some old hippies, you'll hear stories about people boiling soybeans for hours and hours and hours on the stove. And sometimes it might take 3 or 4 hours to soften them. Sometimes they'd be boiling for 8 hours or more. They're very hard to cook sufficiently. And even if they are cooked enough so that they can be eaten, the process of boiling or, for that matter, roasting or baking, none of these processes will remove what we call the toxins or the anti-nutrients that are in soy foods. So they're still hard to digest. They will still interfere with calcium absorption. There's just many ways that those products are just not healthy for us.
Of the toxins, are you saying there's like heavy metals and stuff in soybeans?
That would be an issue more with the industrially processed products as opposed to boiling soybeans on your stove.
So, well, that seems to me if it took that long to fix them, they certainly would take a long time to digest.
They can be very hard to digest. They contain something called trypsin inhibitors. And we need trypsin in order to digest protein. So if you've got something in the soybean that inhibits trypsin, that affects the ability to digest the soybeans. And soybeans are notoriously hard to digest.
We have a question from the audience about trypsin. It says, soybeans are naturally high in trypsin. The process of fermentation and tofu making, I think the typo here, it deactivates trypsin and makes it safe for consumption. Comment, please.
Okay, soybeans are high in trypsin inhibitors. They're not high in trypsin. It's more the trypsin inhibitors. The fermentation process as used with miso soup and natto and tempeh, but not with tofu. Tofu is not fermented. Tofu is precipitated, and that's different. The fermentation process will eliminate most of the trypsin inhibitors, and that's why products like miso and natto and tempeh are more digestible and healthier for us.
I've only seen tofu in the form of little chunks that almost look like soft cheese. Does it come in different forms?
There are parts of China where they actually will ferment tofu, but that's not what we find available in the stores here.
Okay. I was looking up some of the information about your book on Amazon. Amazon gives your book 4.5 stars, and a lady wrote in a review, absolutely brilliant, and this is from a nutrition activist, looks like Beth Ann Ilion. Kayla T. Daniel has written an incredibly well-documented, well-researched book on the dangers of soy. Anyone who buys any processed food at all should be reading this book. Soy is being hidden in all sorts of food these days, and Kayla Daniels uncovers the truth for us. Could you go through your book a bit and tell people what they would, kind of information they would be getting? Is it overview? Is it something for them personal?
I'd be happy to. I'm trying to tell the whole soy story. And the book includes some interesting things about the history of soy in Asia and how it came to the West and how people like Henry Ford and Ben Franklin and others were initially very interested in soy. And I have a number of chapters going into each of the different soy products that are on the market. And it includes a lot of interesting information, like, for example, soy milk is not a traditional product in Asia. And that always surprises people. But the truth is soy milk was popularized by Seventh-day Adventist missionaries from America, and they first tried to popularize it in the 20s and 30s. And that is very recent historically, of course. And likewise, soy infant formula. People have the idea that Asians have been feeding soy infant formula to babies for many, many years. And the truth is, soy formula was invented by a Baltimore pediatrician in 1909. So I've got a lot of interesting historical facts about the different products, and I go into the processes that are involved, and how that affects both the nutritional content and the toxicity. For example, what it takes to make soy protein isolate, how you're using high temperatures, high pressure chemical solvents such as benzene, and other things that most people wouldn't really want to be consuming. So there's a whole long section about all these different forms of soy foods. And then there's a section on the allergy issues. There's a section on the danger of manganese to our babies, because the soy infant formula contains 50 to 80 times the amount of manganese that we find in dairy formula or breast milk, and that can lead to attention deficit disorder and other problems. So a whole section on manganese. And the final section, which is quite large, has to do with the plant estrogens, the phytoestrogens, and how they affect the thyroid, the reproductive system, the brain, and how they can contribute to cancer. And that does surprise many people, because the soy industry has tried very hard to convince us that soy will prevent cancer. And they typically will tell us that the rates of breast cancer, colon cancer, and prostate cancer are lower in Asia. And that is absolutely true. But if you're going to credit soy for those lower rates, then I think we need to blame soy for the higher rates of thyroid cancer, pancreatic, esophageal, liver, and stomach cancers. And in fact, Asians don't eat very much soy, and there's just many dietary and lifestyle factors to consider having to do with the different cancer rates in Asia. So anyway, it's a big book. It's more than 400 pages, and there's many, many pages of references for people who do want to go look at the references and decide for themselves.
And it's not very expensive. I was looking at it. It's 1977.
It's a very good price on Amazon.
Yes. And a side item here. Did you know that the whole soy story that you wrote, the first edition, the first printing, is now a collector's item and it's $50?
Well, I don't know that many people would be buying that because the only one still available is the first edition.
Well, when it comes up on Amazon as $50, that to me means it's a collector's item and it's just a really rare and wonderful book.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to know, is it just the messing up of the hormones that causes the prostate, colon, and breast cancer? Or is there some other kind of interference that's going on that maybe your body can't digest it? Or
there's many, many factors. With the evidence that soy might cause or contribute to breast cancer, there's good evidence that the plant estrogens will contribute to breast cell proliferation, and that is a marker of breast cancer risk. And because of that, the Israeli Health Ministry, the French Food Agency, the German Institute for Risk Assessment, and here in the United States, Cornell University's Center for Breast Cancer and Environmental Research, all those groups have said that women who have a family history of breast cancer or who have been diagnosed with breast cancer should exercise caution about eating soy.
So it's not a specific thing that happens in their body, it's just an interference of trying to use it?
There's many, many factors, and that's why the book got so big. For example, in addition to the estrogen issue, there's the issue of protein quality. Many soy industry people will talk about how soy protein is very high quality, that it contains all the essential amino acids, etc. Well, contains all is not the same as contains all in the right ratios and at the right levels. And in addition to the issue about the essential amino acids, there's a big thing about the importance of the amino acid cysteine. And that's a sulfur-containing amino acid that is absolutely vital for proper immune system function. And soy does contain pretty high levels of cysteine, but the problem is they're all bound up in those trypsin inhibitors we were talking about earlier, so we don't actually get the benefit from it. And without usable cysteine, it's going to adversely affect our immune systems, and without a fully functioning good immune system, we are going to be more prone to cancers.
So any woman out there that has breast cancer in their family should never eat soy at all, ever.
That's what leading oncologists are now saying, and of course that's the warning from the Israelis, the French, the Germans, and from Cornell.
Do you think we in America don't get the real information because there's so many big business people pushing the real information to the back?
There's certainly a lot of marketing, and it's all about big business.
I want to be selfish here for a minute, and I'm sitting here thinking about how do you, maybe nobody's interested but me, but how do you make milk out of a bean?
Well, that is the part of that whole issue. You know, when you start contemplating that, you realize that that's not something you're going to be able to easily do by yourself. It's not true milk, as you know. And when we're getting into talking about things like soy milk for babies or soy infant formula, people are very big on saying that our babies are not calves and they shouldn't be getting cow's milk, but you know, our babies are a whole lot more like calves than they are like little soybeans.
Well, It looks like very rich milk. It looks white and sticky and creamy, or at least some of it did that I've seen. And it's very unusual, but my babies were allergic to my milk. And the doctor wouldn't believe me until my babies just nearly starved to death. But they put them on Nutramigen. And my kids are like 40 years old, so this stuff's been around for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has been, and many doctors are now finding that in fact many women have babies who are allergic to their breast milk. We're hearing more and more of those stories. And
well,
it's really getting back to the issue of we need to be getting our women healthy before they become pregnant.
Well, I was highly, highly allergic to milk when I was young, and my children have carried that through, particularly the milk proteins. But I cannot get my daughter off soy. She feeds it to her kids. I've given her your book. I'm going to send her to your site, because there's lots of articles there on your site about all of these research articles, and they're very well documented.
And some of her questions may be answered in the frequently asked questions section of soyfreesolutions.com, because of course the question everybody's saying is, if I can't tolerate milk, what should I be using instead? And I do answer those questions. And also, many people who do in fact react severely to supermarket milk do very, very well with raw milk. And there's a whole huge movement to secure our right to get raw milk, because so many people need it for good health.
I have a question like that. Her name's Anne. If someone has been on a soy diet for many years, what do you suggest as a way of recovery?
If they were on a soy diet for many years?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an interesting question, and it's asked a lot. We're getting more and more people like that, because from childhood they may have been on soy, they may have been in a vegetarian family, so we are hearing about more and more people who've been taking soy for years. And it is a more complicated situation than just stopping the soy. Of course, that's normally very important to get off the soy. But then we need to look at what else is going on. And generally, the digestive system is compromised, and we need to heal the gut. That's usually the first priority, no matter why a person is sick or having health problems. We look at the gut first, and there's a whole lot we can do in terms of restoring digestive health. So there's some very good news there. Now, if there's a problem with, say, excess manganese because of soy formula during the first 6 months, so we can test for that. We can eliminate that. If there's heavy metal issues, and that is likely not only because of some of the processing of soy products, but because a person who is on soy for years would not be able to properly eliminate or detoxify. So we're often looking at heavy metal issues. That's something to look at. Reproductive and thyroid issues, they're important to address. Many people will do much better if they're taking things like coconut milk and coconut oil, and that will support the immune system and nourish the thyroid. But we do have a whole lot of people who, after years of being on a high soy diet or a low-fat diet, have lost their ability to digest fat properly, so we need to address that, because avoiding fat is not the issue. That's not a good solution. We need to figure out how we can improve the digestion. So there's many, many issues. We have to get good food into people and help restore their health, and also an appropriate supplement regimen, and that needs to really be appropriate. It needs to have their name on it. We need to do a little lab testing and find out what people really need.
Do you do these kind of consulting? I can't talk.
I work with a lot of people who are in soy recovery, or they're recovering vegetarians, or they have a lot of health issues that are probably soy related. So many of these people will call me, and I work with people long distance by phone. and I can order lab work all over the country. That's not a problem.
How do they get in touch with you for that?
They can go to my website, wholesoystory.com, and use the contact there, or my email address is whole nutritionist, that's whole nutritionist, at earthlink.net.
Do you work with them then over the phone, or do they have to send you blood samples, or?
Typically, I will start people with a hair test and a urine test, and the samples will go to the laboratory. And occasionally, depending on what's going on, I may want to order more laboratory work, including a blood test, so they would have their blood drawn locally, and then it would be shipped to a laboratory, probably in one near Atlanta, but it would depend on what we want to get done.
When you're looking at people's blood and they've been on soy, is it just generally they're like, is it anemic, or what's the general finding?
I wish I could say it's always the same thing, but it's not. If we're looking at the amino acid profile, we would find that they're typically very low in the sulfur-containing amino acids, things like methionine, sulfur, and cysteine. In terms of their fatty acid profiles, there's a lot of imbalances there. There are just many, many possibilities.
So if they're low in the sulfur amino acid, then their methylation, their ability to process foods, is really low.
Their ability to do just about anything is low.
You talked about to heal the gut. Does soy cause leaky gut or irritable bowel?
It can cause both of those problems, and I would not say it's usually the only issue, but it certainly makes matters worse. And soy can be very hard on the gut, starting with the fact that it stresses the pancreas, and then it will irritate the gut. We've got many, many pictures from medical journals about the level of damage, which can be severe. So we need to both take soy out of the diet, since it is an irritant, and we also need to do things to nourish the gut and help it to heal.
Here's a question from Georgia and Santa Fe. Do you find people who are on soy have generally low energy?
Many people will report that, yes. And one of the reasons, the most obvious reason, would be the low thyroid. And the reports we hear most often is that, say, a woman in middle age will start taking a whole lot of soy milk and other soy products because she's heard it's good for menopause. And then she starts experiencing weight gain, fatigue, lethargy, malaise, and problems like that. And then, of course, because she's middle-aged, she hears that that's typical and to be expected in middle age anyway. But the truth is that soy really harms the thyroid, and we are in an epidemic of hypothyroidism. And perhaps the most famous case of that right now is Oprah Winfrey. And Oprah has gone on her show talking about how much she loves her soy shakes that she makes with soy milk and soy powder and blueberries. And Oprah has had some major thyroid problems.
Oddball question. Soy bean, is it bean? Is it like a bean like pinto beans or northern beans?
It is a bean like them, but it is higher in phytoestrogens, and it's higher in anti-nutrients called phytates and higher in trypsin inhibitors. So all the beans are different, but soybeans have the highest levels of those problem factors. And it's the only bean that people are actually likely to eat several times a day every day.
So we shouldn't eat these other kinds of beans either?
The other kinds of beans, prepared properly and eaten occasionally, are fine and they're nutritious. The danger with soy is that so many people are eating it for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks.
Okay, here's a question, an interesting question. Is soy bean sprouts just as unhealthy as soy burgers or tofu? And that's from Jane Louise in Oklahoma.
I'm sorry to say they're actually worse because the short-term sprouting increases a plant estrogen called coumestans. And in China, that type of product, soy sprouts, would be used pharmaceutically as with a short-term goal in mind. So a lot of people have the idea that short-term fermenting and sprouting will make a healthy product, but it's actually long-term fermenting that's needed.
I don't want to leave people's questions out, but I don't understand this one, and you may have answered it. Is soy an engineered food but okay in a raw state? And I think from what you said already, that answer is no.
I often hear from some vegans that soy, they wish they could eat raw soy. And the truth is raw soy is the most dangerous of all because soy absolutely has to be cooked and processed in order to get rid of some of these things like trypsin inhibitors. And there have been deaths when soybeans have been undercooked and they're still raw. So you cannot eat raw soy. It just can't be done.
It's poisonous?
Yes, it has to be cooked. And the long-term fermenting is the only way to make it really safe and nutritious. But at the very least, it has to be heavily cooked.
I think we've talked around this question a lot. What diseases are majorly linked to soybean consumption?
Yes, I think we've gotten into that. There'd be infertility issues, cardiomyopathy, heart arrhythmias, some cancers. Basically, there's many, many problems. And with some of them, soy would not be the only factor, but it would be part of the problem.
Here's an interesting one. I don't think we've touched on this one. Is soy associated with Alzheimer's, and if so, how does that manifest?
That's an interesting question, and I would like to let people know about the Honolulu study. And basically, they were looking at the data from a group of 8,006 Japanese-American men between 1900 and 1910, and they were all enrolled in this huge study. And anyway, from 1991 to 1993, a neuroepidemiologist named Dr. Lon White and his team got together and they looked at 3,734 of those men. And they did some serious work there and they found that there was substantial cognitive decline among the ones who were eating the most soy. And among those who died, they found atrophied brains. So it's almost like a National Enquirer headline, you know, with the shrinking brains.
Mm. Well,
it was a very good study. It was well designed. It had a lot of people in it. And, of course, the soy industry claims it was poorly designed. But independent scientists have evaluated that study and found it to be a very good study.
So they can read your book, Whole Soy Story, get that at Amazon, and give your website again and how they can contact you.
There are two websites, wholesoystory.com, after the book title, and the second one is soyfreesolutions.com. And people can contact me through those sites or through my direct email, which would be Whole Nutritionist, WHOLE Nutritionist, at earthlink.net.
We are out of time. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dr. Daniels. For our listening audience, please join us on our Thursday show. That's Station 2 here on BBS. And we'll be doing vocal profiling live. We're going to be talking about compatibilities and the issues around couples who have money issues. We are going to be broadcasting. So if you want to know more about that, you want to watch us do that on the air, that is Vocal Profiling Live, Thursday at 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern, or you can visit our website at Nutrasounds.com. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels. And this is Sherry Edwards and Dr. Kayla Daniels for BBS Radio and Sound Health, signing off.
Thank you.